Hi, everyone. You're listening to Bushwick Junction on Radio Free Brooklyn. This is a show about life's inflection points, hosted by me, Asha Saluja. It's about the crossroads in our lives, which paths we choose when we reach them, and where those choices lead us or don't. We'll talk about the decisions we agonized over and the decisions we didn't even realize we were making until years after we made them. We'll talk about how we decide things, how we weigh our options, or how we tap into our intuitions. And we'll talk about the degree to which our choices matter. Do we have any control over the things that alter our fate, or do we end up in the same place no matter which roads we take? On each show, I have a guest tell me about all the big decisions they have ever made in order. We'll start with birth, fast forward to their first big decision, and map out the road their life has taken as a series of these inflection points or junctions. So with that, I will introduce today's guest, Evan. Say hi.
Hi.
Evan is a new community member here at RFB. You're soon to be Monday Brooklyn Bandstand host. So tune in tomorrow for Evan's first Brooklyn Bandstand at what time? Quick plug.
4 p.m.
4 p.m. Perfect timing. Just get you through the end of your workday slump. Evan, do you want to give us... Evan warned me before the show that he doesn't like bios, which, fair, they suck. Do you want to give me a little bit more of a bio, just like, what are you up to in this life? What's happening in your life right now?
Yes. Well, aside from junctions, just a lot of things are happening. So who I am, I guess, I studied mechanical aerospace engineering. Well, aerospace engineering is my concentration of study. And, I consider myself an artist. I do art. I paint. I make music. I draw. I was a graffiti artist at one point. I do a lot of different things, and I'm at a point where I'm just merging all the facets of myself and trying to live a well-rounded life. And like I said, develop emotional maturity.
We're going to get to emotional maturity in a second. And you heard that correctly. Evan is an engineer / artist. So the first question on this show is, tell me about the circumstances into which you were born.
Okay. I was thinking about that one, and that's a very open-ended question, I guess. And, I don't know. I was trying to think of, have you seen the movie, Big Fish?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like trying to come up with a story like that, you know, like, you know, these odd circumstances that I, you know, arrived on this earth and
wow,
things that align, you know.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you brought that up. That whole like movie's premise is super just relevant to this show. I need to rewatch it.
Yeah, it's a really awesome.
But also
movie.
It's fake. Big Fish means right. That the story's made up.
Right.
So maybe tell me the real one.
Okay.
Or you can make one up. I wouldn't know.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know you.
Well, that's the thing. It's really interesting, I think, that sometimes we, you know, what we remember about, like, even like what, you know, what the question is, you know, in the show, the premise of the show is like, we're talking about our, you know, how our decisions led up to who we are now. And so when you think back, sometimes you're not really in the moment or understanding how you're processing things. And later on, you have this kind of, you know, this figment of your past self, you know, it's an imaginary image of yourself, you know. And
it's especially true for the story of how you were born, because you can't process
exactly.
Anything. You're just only retelling it later.
Well, I grew up in I can say this, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. My parents, my mother's Mexican and Black. My dad is Jamaican. I think that's some sort of has some relevance to who I am, a lot of relevance to who I am. My grandmother was Mexican and Aztec Indian, which I think is interesting. Her grandmother, which was my great grandmother, held me at my after I was born. And I don't remember, but she shortly passed away after that. But she didn't speak Spanish or English. She spoke an Aztec dialect. I'm not fully sure about everything. You know.
Yeah.
But I just think that's interesting. I mean, I'm a product of very diverse background. Lived in South Central Los Angeles, which was down the block from where, you know, they kind of say the it was like epicenter of where they say the riots kind of started.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was like probably, see, I'm 33, so that was like 92. And, you know, so.
You were there.
Yeah, it was like, you know, 25 years ago. Yeah, something like that, 26 years ago. So, yeah, I was there. And, yeah, I remember seeing it unfold. And I just remember also just a lot of the life that was, you know, to some extent, stereotypical of what one might think South Central Los Angeles was. I had a neighbor's house whose house was painted blue, for obvious reasons,
for gang related reasons. I don't know if that's obvious to our RFB audience,
right? But yeah, it was an interesting place. I mean, I think and there was just so many, and there's also so many other aspects of growing up there that I remember that totally are outside of what the stereotype is for that area, you know.
When you were a child, did it feel like you were in an atmosphere that was dangerous or scary in some way, or did you kind of feel like idyllic and you didn't know any better? And it's children funny. Sort of have a natural innocence to them.
Well, it's funny because both, you know, it just was where I grew up, and so
yeah.
Everything was also just familiar. Things mm-hmm. were just familiar. People were familiar. I felt a sense of belonging, even though like I wasn't in any gangs. I didn't. There was nobody from my who I grew up with was trying to pressure me to be in any gangs. It wasn't like they show on TV and that, right? Maybe some of them experienced that kind of pressure between each other, but I never that never was brought upon me, and it was always like, yo, you stay out of this.
Sounds like you were with the right people.
Well, they were doing bad. Some of them, a lot of them were doing bad things, but they were like, you know, you're part of the community. They saw me as certain, you know, they saw a different lane for me. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Like even though they might not have even realized that, you know, as, you know, back then, but, as I got older and have gone back and talked to some of my friends, they're like, yeah, you know, I'm glad one of us got out of here. And it, you know, and
yeah,
it's an interesting and fatalistic thing, but yeah.
Mm-hmm, so much to sink into. Like, they say, glad one of us got out of here. And why do you think the people in your life saw that for you so early?
I think some of it had to do with my parents and their focus and how they kind of tried to guide me, where they tried to guide me
mm-hmm.
In terms of just like staying out of trouble and, you know, and them also being people who tried to be open and supportive of the other kids that were in our community, that even though they were kids too, at some point they were kids like my age, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we played and then they branched off and did whatever they did. But my parents were always like tried to be supportive of them, because they knew them since they were kids, you know.
Yeah,
like they
yeah.
would, you know, some of my friends would come by and ask my dad to help them with their homework because they didn't have somebody to help them with their homework. And so there are things, small things like that, where they would, you know, and they would knock on my door and not want to, they're, you know, they're not like, hey, like I need help with my homework. They're like, hey, can I talk to your dad? I'm like, why? And they're like, yeah, you know,
oh, a little, I'm like,
yeah, whatever. Yeah. 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 It was interesting. It's interesting.
That's really sweet.
That's nice. Yeah. But I think that's why they kind of, you know, they kind of knew that I was part, you know, they're like, you're part of this, a community, how, and you don't have to do, I don't know. It's interesting. I think sometimes we feel like we need to do more to be part of a group than we actually have to, you know?
Right. And I have a sneak preview that actively participating in a community is coming back full circle right now.
Definitely.
I guess you're thinking about the model your parents showed you.
Oh,
when
definitely.
You were a kid,
yeah.
So we'll get to that later. So when I want to fast forward to your first big conscious decision, but I also want to just interject. It sounds like you're aware and you've expressed to me that there was this big junction before you even really started making decisions, which was
yeah.
kind of being placed in that lane by your community, the get out of here lane.
Yeah, definitely.
Like your life could have ended up really different if you hadn't been perceived that way, if your parents hadn't been guiding right. you that way. So that's awesome.
Right. And also if I didn't like innately have some sort of like
drive
or yeah. whatever. Yeah, definitely. And just interests that were things that like helped me like lock onto things, like, you know, lock onto a path of just getting toward, you know, something just to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah. So what were they? What were you looking forward to as a kid or teenager?
I liked graffiti. I used to do graffiti. I always had a interest in art, and my mom's side of family, well, both my mom and my father's side, they were very artistic. And like my dad's, my dad likes to draw. He's actually a twin. That's another funny story. His brother is an architect, but they, like, he wanted to be an architect, but like he has four brothers, him and his twin brother, plus three other brothers. And his parents were kind of like, you have to do a different thing. You guys can't do the same thing.
What?
And yeah. So his twin was an architect, and they were, which would be cool. Like twin brother architect.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they kind of wanted them to do different things. They all played different instruments. They all did different things. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So even the twins couldn't do the same thing.
Right. And so it was like kind of like.
That's such a funny rule.
Yeah, it's just arbitrary. My dad was, you know.
Extremely arbitrary.
Yeah.
So what did he do instead?
Accounting. Yeah.
Oh my God. But he wanted to be an architect?
Yeah, I think so. I think now he kind of, he's.
But he gets to draw in his spare time. And.
Well, him and his brother, they designed and built like the house that our house that I grew up in. They remodeled it and did all the planning and the drawing and the architecture for that.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing that I don't know that you're grappling with this, but it sounds like your dad did, and I know I do, and lots of people on the show do, is like doing your passion as your main job.
Oh yeah.
It's like the big question. Like, do I want to do what I love for money, or do I want to do something else for money and then do it on the side?
Yeah.
So this is like your birthright, the struggle.
Yeah, definitely. Because my dad was he played reggae music. He was like, it was a very small community back then of reggae musicians, like people who came over from Jamaica and like in Los Angeles. And so he was like, you know, as any like community that's like gaining the kind of exposure that one would be gaining, like at the time, Bob Marley, there's no internet and all that, you know? So like that was a small community. He was like covering for bands and like, you know, and opening for these big acts and put that aside for like life, quote unquote,
right.
You know, like what the old traditional, what life,
having a family,
and I think
doing
like
a job.
Kids nowadays, kids nowadays. No, I think like I just found out I'm a millennial as well. But
you just found out?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I just found out I'm a millennial. I'm a millennial too.
Yeah. Oh, like 84, I think, is a cutoff now, and that's like I'm December of 84. So
oh, interesting.
Right there. Yeah. So I think that's the cutoff. Don't quote me.
It sounds right.
They were like, so like ultimately they. I don't know. I think I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, you were talking about the impetus in older generations put your fun life aside and like start a real life.
I think like I'm like, and there's like a kind of like we're caught in that middle we're like, all right, we're not going to be YouTube stars, but we don't want to.
We don't want to like have a 9-to-5 for our whole lives.
Right.
And,
like we're something that a 9-to-5 that we just don't like, we dread.
Right.
Which I've been there. I was there.
Yeah.
For a while. And so I guess like ultimately like the first major decision I had to make, or what conscious junction I came up to, was like what college to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And made my parents very furious, because I just kind of had this idea like, I know I'm supposed to go to college at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I was always in like these highly gifted magnet programs growing up.
So wait, let's take a step back. You're like a high school kid. You love art. You're good at math, though.
Yeah.
You're good at math and science.
Yeah. So I just did that, you know, because I could do it. And also kind of like, it was like, yeah, look, I was bussed out of, I went to like the highly gifted magnet
like
program.
A magnet school, yeah.
And there was like one in my neighborhood that's I think why my parents moved to that area. But there was one in the South Central that was my elementary school. It was like down the block, walking distance, and you don't walk anywhere in California. But like it was down the block, and so I went there. And then there was another one for junior high that I went to that was in another. Area like
so you got bussed away basically.
Yeah, but it was in a rival gang area, because it's funny. Yeah, it's interesting. But like, yeah, like I had these little experiences like being like going back and forth and feeling like I was belonged in both areas. And so I kind of like never got into any problems. It was weird because people would say stuff to me and I'm like, okay, whatever. And I'd keep on moving and just not, and I don't know. I don't recommend it. I don't think that's like how you handle things, but it worked. I don't know how, but
kind of be silent and mysterious. Yeah. And keep
just kind
moving.
Of ignored what, like when people would like ask me things of like gang stuff, like that I knew was, like there's a response like this means that I'm going to rob you, or this means like I would just like I didn't hear you,
just like learn the signals and yeah. Don't do them. Okay. Yeah. So you're a relatively good kid, you're not getting into too much trouble. Yeah. You're into math, you're into science, also, and you love art.
Yeah, and doing graffiti and stuff.
And doing graffiti, so which I guess is illegal, but it's like the most beautiful kind of illegal.
Well, the thing too that like in Los Angeles there was it became like this thing of like tag banging, like where people were graffitiing, and there was also like it was less about the art, it was more about like just getting your name up. And also there was the gang thing is really different. When I came out here and I just totally realized like, oh, gangs are like totally something else out here. There was like a primary purpose and then a gang. Out there it's like gang and then whatever other thing, like graffiti too, but gang first. Mm. That's a whole nother topic, but
fair.
I ended up like doing like graffiti all the time and just hanging out with people and trying using that as a way to like push away some of the negative attention. Like sometimes people would, I'd carry my book with me purposely because I know people would like try to ask, you know, try what they call hit you up. Hey, you're from what gang are you from? Or where are you affiliated with? And I just like, oh, here's my book. Look through my book. And they were like, oh, this is cool. This is cool. I like this. It would totally distract me from the intent, you know, whatever.
You're like, yeah, this is illegal, but look, I'm an artist.
Right. And like, and also like the people who were in gangs and stuff like that, they would be like,
got it.
They're like, oh, you're an artist. You're not.
Okay. Okay. So yeah. Whereas tagging was also a gang activity,
right.
You had your book with you. You're like, no, I'm legit. This isn't about this.
I do pieces. I do like.
Got it. Yeah.
And
cool.
They categorize me as something else too. And so I think that's interesting. I don't know.
An artist kind of helped you duck under the radar.
Right. And
as an identity.
Yeah. And I think it's weird though, because then when I started getting bussed out to this high school, which was like totally out of the hood, it was like in like West LA, mm-hmm. I kind of felt like, I don't know, it was like I felt like I was out of my normal, I was definitely out of my normal surroundings and exposed to a lot of different people.
Yeah.
which I come from a very mixed background, so I know different people of different races, different, you know, but just to be with peers all the time and also like people who challenged, I guess, kind of, I don't know. I felt kind of challenged more with academics, because I didn't know until later on that I had the ADD. But like I look back now, I'm like, yeah, I totally
got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as diagnosis happy back then.
Exactly.
So it comes time to decide what's up for college. And you said you made your parents mad. What did you do to make your parents mad? You didn't want to go.
No, I did. I just figured I needed to. I just didn't do anything. I took like the SAT, like the last like SAT you could take that year, and this college was very college. It was this high school was very college preparatory, mm-hmm. and I just kind of like, I don't know. I just felt always like kind of felt like a little bit of an outsider my whole life, but there because even though I would table hop, I call that, you know, table hopper. I was cool with everybody. Like,
yeah.
Enough, you know. But, you know, didn't really, there was like the study crowd, the people who were like, seemed like they were always like, I was in their classes and, mm-hmm. you know, but then there was like the graffiti crowd and the beat making crowd that I'd hang out with. And like, you know, so I don't know. It was just kind of like, didn't have this focus on college like my parents wanted me to.
Hmm.
And I wrote like, there's like, you could check off, send my scores to like whatever college, you know, I think. We might be familiar. You might be familiar. Like, you get, do your SAT.
Yeah, yeah.
I checked off like MIT because I was interested in engineering. Checked off like Harvard because I was like, that's a school with a name. And because
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, and there was like, but like I just didn't really follow up with them, and they were following up with me. I got like these recruitment letters and like invitations to come. Like, we're having this thing and come and meet with the recruiter.
Right.
And they would call and I didn't go. And my parents, my mom was like, why aren't you, like, you told me you, and then the guy called and said, hey, he never showed up.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I just thought, I don't know. I think it was also like with like a self-esteem issue too. I just kind of thought that it didn't seem real to me.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was junk mail.
Thought it wasn't going to work out. Thought it wasn't for you. Yeah,
I thought it was junk mail. I thought like, okay, they're just calling me because I said send them my scores. Mm-hmm. But like, I didn't realize later, okay, my scores were good enough for them to,
right,
to
even like solicit
a follow-up from them. I didn't understand that. Yeah. And that's what got my mother really mad, because she's like, you're not doing anything like active to take control of your life, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I spoke to my mother a couple weeks ago as I'm getting to this other transition in my life. She noted that this as one of like the first time like she saw me making a decision as an adult. And she said, I don't really fully remember it. I just kind of remember being annoyed because I get like that. And she was like, yeah, you know, just upset and pressing me about, why haven't you followed up? Why aren't you, you know, doing what you need to do? She said, you know, if you want, you can just, if you don't, I guess, take action on this stuff, you're going to have to live here and you're going to have to pay rent. Mm-hmm. And but you're still going to go to like community college. And then you also have to get a job. And you're going to make it. And I kind of told her like, I did send them the scores and stuff like that, but who said I really want to go to Harvard or like, you know, I don't necessarily, it's just a thing. Like, and, I didn't know it at the time, but like, she's telling me this now, like, she's like, yeah, you know, she's like, I saw like, even though she still was upset, she was like, you know, saw it as the first time I really made a conscious, like, this is what I'm going to do. And like, I'm not, just because you think that, you know,
right,
that this is a good path, you know?
Well, what, so the decision you made at the time that she noted was what?
Well, that I didn't.
To not do.
Just to not. To not, right.
Okay.
And it's funny because then the thing is I came to New York and.
But what ended up happening? What did you do for college?
I went to New York. I waited till the last minute. So all the deadlines for like all the California schools and most schools, the California school deadlines were like November 30th.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't taken my SAT yet. So I couldn't. I was like, I don't know. And I'll also pass the deadline. And then so. New York schools, and that's the thing. Like, I kind of just wanted to come to New York.
Mm. And had you been before?
No.
Just an idea.
Like, I used to tell people, yeah, I came to New York for college, but that's not why I came to New York.
Uh-huh.
I came to New York because I like New York hip hop.
More than California hip hop?
Yeah. Well, at the time.
Right.
Not more than the specific songs or specific artists. I just liked I guess my own romanticized idea of hip hop culture,
right.
That I had when I was a kid. That was like a draw. That was a huge draw. Like, I was into graffiti. I was into breakdancing. I wasn't very good at it, but I was into it.
Right.
I was into like hip hop as like hip hop, you know, as a culture. And I was just like into it, and New York being the birthplace. And I was like, I want to be there. And, had nothing to do really with engineering. There was a school that I got accepted to out here that were easy for me to, I think, easy, like they were, I don't know, they weren't too easy. I don't know. It's just, I got accepted. I just was like,
you not, got accepted. They weren't and engineering late. Seemed easy.
Well, yeah, it was something I could do.
Yeah, you were like, I can handle it.
And it's also something that I knew is there's always a demand and always like, you know, I was always,
it seemed like a practical route,
right.
But you really could get to be here amongst this culture that you were excited about.
Exactly.
You did it, as the kids say, for the culture.
Yeah.
For the culture. So you get here. What happens?
I'm in Long Island, New York.
Okay. Which, like, not a ton of graffiti.
No.
Little did you know.
Well, and like exit out there, exit 56.
Where is this?
New York Institute of Technology, and it was at the time they had a Central ISLIP campus, which is like far.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like, it's like, this is nowhere near the city, and this is, you know, and so I look back and I appreciate the education I got there because it was very, there's not only is it, they teach you like engineering, but there's a very practical approach and like easy, it was easy for me to get a job. And I've come across a lot of people in New York and who went there and it's like, oh yeah, like off the radar, but very good, like good practical, school. Practical. Yeah. And yeah, it's like not that I not ended up just like, oh, I'm not using my degree, you know, not
yeah.
using my experience.
Did you, you finished school there and
yeah.
did you live there the whole time?
Oh yeah. I was an RA. Cause that's the thing. My parents were like, well, you're going to have to like figure out a way since you kind of took this lackadaisical approach and
yeah.
like you could figure out a way to like pay for it yourself. And I was like, all right, which kind of, I kind of have that. That's just how things have been with us my whole life. My little sister has it a little bit better, but
I've heard this kind of big sibling
exactly
angst. Okay.
But, yeah.
So did you find your way into the city and into the subculture that you were excited about, or did you kind of have to put that on the back burner because you're too far?
Well, I ended up, yeah, I did find my way into the city a lot, and I would come explore. And but then I guess life and like just being in college and studying engineering, it was like that became what I did. And it just kind of creeped up on me. Like I felt like, you know, sometimes like you spend some time trying to, I feel like it's like deep cover, like one of those undercover movies, like where you're like, yeah, I'm going to infiltrate this so I can do something else. And then you end up like that just consumes
yeah.
you. You're like, oh, now I'm this person.
You go too undercover, like yeah. Miscongeniality.
Like Miscongeniality.
Yeah, you get too into it. Okay, yeah. So you're an engineer now. You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And tell me about like finding work. What happens after college?
Well, I just, this is where the next big, I guess, thing happened or whatever. It's not that big, but it was just like, it was a subconscious thing where it's like, it wasn't an active decision,
mm-hmm.
but I kind of was like, all right, this is what I'm studying. So like I would intern at my uncle's for like, who's the architect. So
right.
I intern at his place is like, okay, he needed an engineer. My uncle has his own practice in San Francisco, and I would go over there on the summer every once in a while and say, you know, I think it was like 2 years in a row I did, two summers. And I would just do these energy load calculations for some of the buildings that he would, and projects that he's working on. And then I had this on my resume, which is, it actually was a thing. I thought it was, you know, this is my working from uncle, but it was actually like I was doing something and something that ended up being recognizable,
mm-hmm.
Or helped me get a job, because then I went into construction. I interviewed with this HVAC company, with, you know, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, which a lot of people don't know is rocket science.
Huh.
It's the same concepts that you use for aerospace engineering. It's heat transfer.
I believe you.
And you know, fluid dynamics. It's just the same kind of stuff. But I worked in that field because I had that background in working with my uncle, and
mm-hmm.
this like my junior year or whatever, the year that everyone gets like internships for that line them up for a job after. So I guess this was the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
The summer before my senior year, I kind of like, all right, went there, this company, and I worked there because it was easy. I ended up getting the job. It wasn't necessarily, it was like easy. It was just like I followed up and I called, and they were like, okay, you have the qualifications that we're looking.
Right.
It was just, that's why it was easy. It's just like one-on-one.
And is this in the city?
Yeah.
So you finally make your way to New York.
Yeah.
And where in the through line, like where is the through line of your art at this point? Are you like dead focused on just work? Or are you getting to do some other stuff too?
No, like this is like being in the midst of just like up into my, like, I guess junior year, sophomore, junior year, like I had more time to like paint or draw. I used to airbrush sneakers and stuff like that for extra cash.
Oh, cool.
And I, you know, like someone, these are the new color sneakers coming out. Okay, I got the old color. Can you paint them for me? I'm like, yeah, sometimes I do that. Or like someone's like, oh, I have this outfit that I want something to match. I'd like, or I just come up with ideas and paint stuff. So I do things like that on the side. But then as I started like getting deeper in my studies and also going to like work I had to do, I had less time to do that, mm-hmm. less time to make music, which I don't know if I mentioned, but
yeah, we haven't talked about that
all yet. That stuff. And so like, and that stuff wasn't, never seemed like to me as a income stream.
Right.
Like, so,
so
like,
this is interesting because you just talked about how your dad had to set aside
yeah.
a fun life to kind of do like a grown up life. And you kind of started in that direction.
Yeah. And I didn't really like, I started in that direction. I think about that often. Even like at that time, later on, that I started like when I started working and not and doing even less art. Which back in the day, back in college, I would like do a lot of just scribbling in my notebooks. I'm not a good note taker at all because of the ADD. Now I know, but I used to like just draw in class, and that was me just trying to keep my hand like and just
occupied.
get that, and get you know, that's the rare time I would have to have that outlet, you know, to use that outlet.
Interesting.
And so yeah, later on started working and started helping out some friends in the fashion industry who had this little who had a clothing line, and kind of like one of them were always like, dude, like you should quit your job, just quit your job. I'm like, dude, like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, you're this age and you can have fun. And I didn't think of it as, I kind of thought that as silly when he, you know, but as an older now, mm-hmm. I kind of like, all right, I think that.
So did you do it?
No, I didn't. And I ended up being.
Why do you think that person told you that? And why do you think you did? Like, what's the difference between the two of you that made you not do it?
Well, because.
When it seemed like an easy move for him.
Because that's just, he was a person who's like, he's one of the people, who's, that's how he is. You know, he lives by the seat of his pants. He's more like, you know, and that's not me.
Sounds like he came from a privileged background.
No, not at all.
Oh, interesting.
Not at all. And, but that's the thing, like where it's I feel like sometimes, and as I'm getting older, I think we, especially like me growing up in South Central, even to my own right, like I have the privileges that I have. So sometimes even with that though, because like I had things that a lot of my friends didn't have, and in terms of like support and other things that helped me, mm-hmm. and you know, whatever it is, you know, maybe. But so I think in thinking back about that, the it's just interesting. I've been like this post-traumatic stress, like day-to-day survival mode that like I noticed my friends live in, and that like that particular friend lived in too. This friend I got mm-hmm. later in life, who grew up in Albany, which is rough right. where he grew up. And yeah, I noticed that same kind, it's like this hustling, like you're always, everything is a hustle. Like,
yeah, you don't feel like you can take a break.
Right.
You feel like you don't deserve a break. And if you take one, something bad might happen.
Right. And, you know, never take time to take a knee, take a breath and assess your resources, plan ahead.
Yeah.
You know, just see where you, and I don't know. So I kind of like, I didn't realize that then though. I realize that now, but there was just something I was like, dude, no, like this, but also I was in survival, this mode of,
yeah,
like,
you
I
have absolutely to work. Were.
No, mm-hmm. I have this job. I need to do this, you know? And I was making good money. I was making like 50 grand out of college. That was like a lot from, you know, arbitrarily, because I'm from South Central. I didn't know, you know?
No, yeah. That's like, just a good, great starting salary. Yeah. So you are a couple years into work. Like, you didn't quit.
No, I didn't quit.
But you had some friends who were like kind of living life.
Right. And they were like in the fashion industry. And the things are also like, I didn't, And he was in the music industry, did stuff with music. So like, there's a lot of things I didn't understand. Like people had like incentives and like what are they called? Like fringe benefit type things. Like where they were like, you know, you get the things I would spend my money on, mm-hmm. they get for free sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, but then also they're still, you know, scrounging just like I am. And, you know, I realized later that, yeah, I'm just running this rat race as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 2 years in, or 2 year or something like that, I'm thinking like, wow, you know, I'm not making enough money, or I need to like, I don't know.
You're not making enough money to be this unhappy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think the next big Junction, I think, was when I asked for my raise. And I quit because I just didn't. I put in resignation.
Because they said no?
No, because they just weren't responsive. I said, you know, and somebody else was courting me, I guess. And so I ended up going, and it was a very difficult thing. It's not something I wanted to do. I thought I was in a family kind of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody who became a mentor, more so a mentor to me, was like, hey, how much relatively new? And he's like, hey, how much, if you don't mind me asking, how much are you making? He's like, because it's not just about money. It's, you know, there's other things, learning, all this, you know. And I was like, told him how much. And he's like, oh, no. Like, they need to pay you more.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, good. Like, I had done the right thing. And he's like, if they don't pay you, you should continue. Yeah, just go ahead and leave. And they ended up paying me more, like $30,000 more, which is like ridiculous.
Damn.
I didn't realize that until later that, like, hey, like, somebody is working you and they don't like,
they have the extra $30,000, right, that you just have to ask for. You just have to threaten to quit.
Yeah, right. Then they piled more work on me and piled more. I don't know. It became like this environment that was, to some extent, it's construction. I was working construction. It's like,
yeah,
white male dominated industry. It's like this, the last, I still am. So I'm choose my words wisely.
I wanted to follow through. So you've been working in this industry now for like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And the will to quit and drop out of that life has never overpowered your willingness to like have a stable life.
Well, actually then it became like the same where I'm kind of just hard headed. And I'm like, okay, well, I think it's also important to like to be a representative.
Mm-hmm.
And so like in a area in, I'm in this field that I'm not represented as management, as
right,
like, you know, so I'm like, I think I find importance in that. And I was sticking through that. And also I just feel like not quitting in the midst of a project.
Right.
And it just kept on extending, and it became years. And then finally things just came crashing down, like a bunch of like other things. Like my grandfather passed away in Jamaica, and then my grandmother 2 weeks later, and then my aunt, and it was all within three weeks.
Sorry.
Yeah. And the woman I was dating at the time, she was like schizophrenic, and I didn't know that. And like then,
whoa,
right. And so
a lot going on.
Right. And so then all that at the same time, and then I was overloaded with work, and people were recognizing that they were judging me on my potential rather than, you know, realistic metrics. And I gotten to the point where I felt like 2 years later, even later than that, I said, hey, you know what? Quitting time to quit. And I ended up working for myself for a year. And previously I got in this position, this area where I got into the situation where they allowed me to create this drafting department in there for them. Because construction, there's a aspect of construction called building information modeling, which is relatively new, which is where they 3D model all the buildings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so you basically build a building before you build it. So you instead of running into the conflicts that you would while you're building it, you hash those out prior.
Right.
Which
makes
they usually
sense.
Yeah, they do that 2D. They've been doing that 2D for years, like laying drawings on top, which they still do.
Hmm.
They still do this. But it's New York construction is kind of slow to adapt to and progress, but whatever. Yeah, so they're doing that, and because I was young and I was interested and I could use a computer,
mm-hmm.
And because in construction, like, people still fax. They still fax
to
this day.
People are still old, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I ended up doing that.
You're like, I'm a millennial, actually, so.
Right.
So you got basically your own little, like, place of your own, team of your own. And
well, myself.
Gig, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, but then that's why I was stretched thin, because I was doing that and then doing the other job of project management.
Gotcha.
And so that's the whole thing is like, but it was something that I felt because it's drafting. It's like,
yeah,
this is like graffiti. This is like, I'm drawing, I'm drawing lines and I'm drawing, you know, and I'm.
So when you get offered the opportunity to do drafting, you're like, this is what I really want to be doing. I'm just drawing. You're like an architect.
Well, this is a place that I found that I like within, yeah, you know.
So let's take a, we need to take a step back sort of and follow the other through line of what's going on outside of work. Mm-hmm. So over these years, you kind of were like unhappy. You were not feeling like you were expressing yourself in some way. And you clearly had some emotional baggage from this one time when lots of stuff was going wrong. Yeah. But what has happened recently that has sort of provided some resolution to those storylines?
Well, I think the biggest thing was like when I finally left that job, and it was just quitting out of like desperation, like where it was like I had planned to quit for so long. Mm-hmm. And then finally just quit and had this, had the drafting as something that I felt was like, okay, it's something I can do just because I noticed there was a need.
Right.
And it was something I could do for other people. And I ended up doing that for a year, and it was rough. And then it was rough in the fact that, like, you know, running a business and, or trying to run a business and build a business and do.
So you were running your own drafting business, basically. Yeah. You were working for yourself doing that.
And it wasn't, you know, collecting money. It was
that
much.
Freelance hustle. Yeah.
Right. And so I ended up throwing in the towel like a year into it after, and said, you know, but like I was glad I did it, and it gave me this different mentality of like, you know, anytime I go back to, if I'm working for somebody, this is a project, you know, like, you know, there's other aspects to me. There's other, you know, there are things that we agree upon, and things that we have a similar vision, similar intention towards, you know, However, like I still need me, you know, I still am me, and I can't. And I'm also dealing with my ex, like the who's schizophrenic. I realized you have to preserve yourself sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And more, well, not sometimes, all the time, because it's like,
then you can't make any other decision.
Exactly.
You can't do anything else.
Or you can't help someone else because it's
right.
You can't contribute to someone else's community or someone else's thing that someone's building, because like, it's like when they tell you to put the air mask on yourself before you help the kids and the
right.
person next to you.
Because if you don't, then everyone will run out of oxygen.
Exactly.
Interesting. So deciding to stop doing, basically running your own business, was one of those acts of self-preservation.
Well, yeah, like, but it was kind of like weird because it was like, yeah, I, it was good because I had the experience of running my own business, but it was like, oh, I got to go work for someone again. And I realized, though, that, you know, you can work for someone and it's not, you know, like, and it just gave me an idea of my own value. And that, like, I was like, I could make it, like,
right.
without, like.
Once you know you don't need your employer, you treat them a little differently.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens? What job do you get after that? A similar
similar job, but,
yeah.
But, this time in like a different tier of construction management, ended up working on larger high profile projects, but they were luxury condos, and one of them was like a big project. Another one was another big project.
Some moral conflict.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, it was also just not as fulfilling.
Yeah.
I ended up being invited to like this cancer research dinner, and because somebody was, it was like, big fancy thing for one of the developers that, you know, and then, they ended up I don't know. It was just interesting. He said something similar. The developer said something similar, and then the owner of my company, you know, we had this conversation of like, you know, our impact, and like, you know, like look at all these other people here who built, you know, who are this cancer researchers and their contribution. I'm like, yeah, we all contribute to the, but like, it was, you know, and it's something I have had been weighing on me for some time, because like. Previously, when I was in just doing the air conditioning, I was there. They kind of like had me doing stuff for schools, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm building a school. You know,
yeah.
I feel like a little bit, you know,
contributing.
I feel like, yeah, a little bit better about that. So I've been thinking about ways to do more. And I think like one big thing I've been doing is like just writing down the communities that I could be part of, the communities that I already existed in. Like I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Oh, cool.
Yes, thank you. At a school that I feel is really community based, it's Brooklyn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. I go to the one, and there's a few locations. I study at or practice train at Myrtle Clinton Myrtle
Gotcha. Location. So you're writing down. So you're at a point where you're like, wow, I'm at this cancer dinner. And what have I done recently? I built a luxury condo. Right. And so the next thought there is, how can I become part of a contributing community? Yeah. And you write down a list of all of the communities you're part of. Like, where do I start?
Yeah, this is, I mean, this
so
is...
So it's jujitsu. It's what else?
Jujitsu, there was, I mean, there's just a lot of... This is a lot of things that I do, but I write these lists all the time. So I was writing like just different lists, and that was one of them. And it was just like jujitsu. I do. I was make music, and so I've been trying. So I was trying to find this community, like communities
around making music.
Yeah, like beat makers and that I could just check out and just kind of hang out with. One was Pushing Buttons Collective.
Cool.
There's another. Then I was doing that, and I ended up. And then trying to find like things that I could go to. There's like NYC Resist. They're like these hacker spaces that I could check out that would.
And the sort of engineer related community. Yeah.
Engineering and arts related things. Mm-hmm. Just been trying to like, I would just hanging out to more with people that I like. There's a local bar I go to that I would just go and I draw all the time there outside because I have a friend who actually moved, but he was just really funny to me, very talented, did the same thing, like would draw, make beats, like do all kinds of different things, and would program him like this game and put all the characters of people that he knows and these, you know, but you know.
So at what point in the last decade basically did you find time again for your hobbies? Like jujitsu came into the picture. You've been making music this whole time?
No. Not,
you had
not
to
frequently.
Take a break.
Yeah, not frequently. I think I ended up juggling too many things and just like work being too much of it, and not like work that was like combined all the aspects of me.
Did not working for yourself anymore, did starting at a company make it easier to carve out time for hobbies, music, drawing?
No, it actually didn't again. And I thought that would, and I found myself doing the same thing like in meetings, drawing like I did in college and,
wow.
But drawing like ductwork and pipes so it looked like I was paying attention or whatever. But no, like I ended up getting this offer from someone who was a resource when I was working for myself, and actually was trying to get me on this larger project that would be like my bread and butter for the year, and that fell through, and then he ended up opening his own company, and they specialized in augmented reality. Learning tools. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, this is actually like cool, cutting edge technology. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's the bread and butter of what they do right now is what I do with the 3D modeling for buildings. And so like, I was like, wow, like I can, he called me and he's like, hey, do you want a job basically? And I, you know, it was out of nowhere and I felt bad, but I was at a point where in this project that I felt I could quit. And I was mm-hmm. like, you know, and it not drop everything on, you know, that I was working on and to somebody who didn't know what was going on, you know? And I was like, all right, I can transition out of here. And I did. And this was a month ago, a little over a month, which was like, put me at 2 years exactly at that other company.
Gotcha. So you got a new job.
Took a pay cut for a cool job and one that will afford me more time.
Great. And so you're reprioritizing your other stuff and your communities.
Right.
So now I'm that brings us your what? Title.
Now I'm the director of building information modeling and XR, which is mixed reality, which is cool, I think.
Nice. Yeah. Congrats. That's awesome. And you're basically doing computer graffiti now. That's like kind of your job.
Well, and then I also I work remotely all the time. Most of the time and like
sick.
And so I run meetings, and after the meetings I'm like, which I think is a big thing, is like the time that it takes you to get somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It's not just that hour of travel. It's like ramping up, ramping down. It's like
right. Totally.
Big speed bump.
So I want to fast forward now to your Bushwick Junction, as I call it, the titular junction, which basically how you became involved with this community. So I know it was kind of a chance encounter, and I want to hear the story.
Well, similarly, or like how I've been trying to make time when I was making time, trying to find or like squeeze time for my hobbies, what or the things that I don't really think are hobbies or more me that I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where like I would be painting and drawing places, or I would bring my I have a drum machine. I'd bring the drum machine to local places, bars, coffee shops, whatever, and I'd use my drum machine and just like.
Were you doing like open mic sort of?
No, not yet. Now I have been doing that, but at the time I was still recovering and again back into like my emotional maturity and trying to get over some of that time I was speaking about was like a bunch of things that happened and it was kind of traumatizing for me to an extent, and I kind of withdrew and became a hermit.
Hmm.
And so I kind of just needed to be around people and wanted to but also wanted to do the things. Some of the things that I do, like with music and art, are solitary things.
Right.
And so, but this like NPC, it's like you can bring it with you. And so like
got
I
it.
Be
so
solitary
you were like
around
sitting
people.
With headphones exactly. at a bar. Okay, okay.
So I could be solitary.
So
and
you're out
people.
At a bar making beats basically
right.
So that you can have people around you, but also do your thing.
Exactly.
Cool.
And Rob Pritchard, who... Right,
yeah,
one of the co-founders.
RP co-founder.
Yeah, he actually lives across the street from me. I didn't know at the time, you know, but I had never met him before, and he was sitting next to me at a bar that on the corner of our block. And
what bar?
Moloco.
Moloco.
Yeah.
And he sees you on your drum machine,
yeah.
which is like extremely cool for a bar.
Yeah, and I was heading out, and he's like, hey, like, what, you know, what's that? If you don't mind me asking.
Yeah.
It, you know, people have asked me before, and. Stuff and I'm like, yeah, like I want you to ask me and I want
that's why you're doing it in public,
but also leave me alone. So I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then I kind of like, oh, thanks. And he gave me his card and he's like, oh, you make music, you can submit. I'm like, okay, cool. And I'm like, ran out.
Hmm.
And but I did follow up with him and I said, hey, you know, how could I get involved? And we sat down and spoke, and I, you know, it was really interesting speaking to him. And we kind of like, we had the same conversation. We had a conversation about having like the same thought of like being involved in a community, being present, being actively present, actively involved.
Yeah.
Instead of passive, like, you know, some people take, and I didn't feel like I was taking and not contributing, but I felt like I have been just passively contributing, and I want to be more of an active contributor to the communities that, you know, that I the tables that I hop from, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
you wanted to sit at the table instead of hop between for just
right.
a quick second.
Yeah.
And where does this, how does this help on your sort of emotional recovery from the rough period that you had?
Well, it's, interesting. It's like, you know, forcing myself to interact with people.
Hmm.
Are
you an introvert? You're definitely an introvert.
Yeah. But like, it's weird because I am, fine, like there was a time when I was fine interacting with people, although I'm introverted.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know,
of course, yeah.
Now it's like I'm trying to be that again.
Yeah.
I think like I like connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we get into situations. I was in a situation where, you know, you end up feeling like you are afraid of connection. Because
yeah.
If connections become weighty, you wonder how the connection between you and another person will affect you. So as you protect yourself, you fear of vulnerability. And you're also sometimes afraid of if you can help other people, and like you're afraid of what's going on with that person. It might not be like, okay, this person's going to hurt me directly. It's like, oh, this person is hurting. I don't know how to help them. You know?
Yeah. Feeling powerless.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm like realizing that. Not as scary, you know, coming out of survival mode, coming out of the illusions of urgency, I think is a big thing. Yeah.
Wow. That's really beautiful. Coming out of the illusion of urgency.
Yeah.
And sort of just embracing the world.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think that's a beautiful note to end on. Removing the illusion of urgency. God, I can't get over that.
That's my favorite one.
Super eloquent. Thank you so much for being here, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's see. We have some announcements to make. Join us this Thursday, May 3rd, for RFB Presents. First Thursdays at the Well for the Stone Giant EP release show. Stone Giant are retro rockers. That's their genre. Cool genre. And the recent winner of the Deli Magazine's Emerging Artist Poll. New EP coming out Thursday, which they're releasing at The Well. The Well is at 272 Mesrill Street, super close by RFB in Brooklyn. Tickets are $8, $10 at the door. Also, what else? Bushwick Junction is a weekly show. You can, if you want to be on it or if you have any questions about it, you can hit me up at asha@radiofreebrooklyn.org or find me on Facebook. Also, please find me on Apple Podcasts and like and rate and comment so that I become a more legit, real podcast. Theme song is by Nation of Language. Check them out wherever you get your music. What else do I got for you guys? I think that's it. Tune in next week. I will be here. Bye-bye. Mic isn't on. It's me. No, never mind.